This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Bonnie North. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Activists and mental health professionals use it as an opportunity to talk about issues that are often considered taboo. And there are few topics quite as taboo as teen suicide, but there is an urgent need to talk about it. Teen suicide attempts have increased substantially in the United States. Some have even called it an epidemic. A new study looked at the dramatic rise of poisoning attempts among teens, particularly among young girls aged 10 to 15. Dr. John Ackerman is one of the people behind that report, as well as another analysis that looked at how the TV show 13 Reasons Why impacted teen suicides. Dr. Ackerman is the suicide prevention coordinator for the Center of Suicide Prevention and Research at Nationwide Children's Hospital. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers and discussed this troubling trend.
Over the last couple of decades, there was initially a decline and a flattening of youth self-poisoning, sort of intentional ingestion by a variety of substances, and then really in the past 7-8 years, there was a sharp increase in intentional ingestions, and those outcomes were really driven by some of the youngest children that were examined, and in particular, girls aged 10 to 15 seemed to be driving a lot of that increase.
As you alluded to, poisoning attempts by girls have increased exponentially. How did they compare with boys in their same age range?
So we've known for a long time that girls typically will use self-poisoning at higher rates than boys. So what was interesting with this finding, and hopefully something we can take action on, is that we saw the rate of increase really elevated for girls in this last period. So it's always been high for girls, and it's increased even further among the youngest girls in the group. Whereas the boys, their rate of increase stayed pretty flat. They don't have an increase in self-poisonings over the same time period. And, if you saw the graphs, it's pretty visually evident. It's not a subtle finding. It's very obvious, and it's something we need to do better with.
Yeah, the boys are decidedly lower. When we're talking about poisoning, I think of something like a cartoon poison bottle. What do we mean when we say the word poison in this context?
Really all substances, both an over-the-counter medication, prescription, and other toxins that can be used to ingest. And really what we are talking about is any substance that's used to intentionally harm oneself or with the intent of ending one's life. So really talking about a range of medicines and available means that we're looking at. So I think that's part of our message to parents, is that we cannot be casual about the way that we store and practice safe medication storage. We need to be aware, even if it's not prescribed medicine, that kids can really, kind of create a significant medical risk if they're not paying attention to where they're storing it, how much they're storing, disposing of medication that's no longer in use, and all these things. So we need to be aware of all these pieces.
Well, and it seems like some of the most fatal medications are actually going to be things that we might not think of as being poisoning, like Tylenol or Advil.
Yeah, I think there's a misconception that because adults often take medicine for headaches or over-the-counter purposes, that they can't be harmful to kids. And it's also important to know that a lot of times young people don't think through the implications of the medical risk of what they're taking. So from a classification standpoint, we actually think of any ingestion when the young person is thinking about wanting to end their life as a suicide attempt, and we take it very seriously, whether that's 3 Flintstone vitamins or whether it's something more significant. But you're right, things like there are lots of medicines that can cause much more risk than young people think, and so really being aware that that's a major warning sign, and that's an invitation for the adults to make sure they're seeing their, at a bare minimum, primary care physician. But if they've already ingested, take them directly to the emergency room for medical clearance and evaluation.
Now, this research was based on data from the CDC, but you're a health professional who works in this field. Many of these attempts, specifically poisonings, are not ultimately fatal. But why do teens and kids, what do they cite as reasons for attempting suicide?
So we have, kind of putting on my suicide prevention hat, where I think about this most of the time, the most common risk factors for engaging in suicidal behaviors is feeling depressed, feeling like a burden, feeling hopeless, not having a way forward. And if you think about why young people can sometimes be more at risk is they haven't had the same ups and downs as adults. They are in the valley, and they've not seen it get better. They don't know that emotional pain, as severe as it may be, will have these ups and downs. So we really want to be present and be curious about what the young person's experience is, and not to dismiss it, not to say, oh, things will get better, or, oh, there's other fish in the sea, to really try to sit down and navigate that pain with them and help them understand that you'll be with them every step of the way, rather than trying to say it's not a big deal or things will just automatically get better, because they don't know that.
Yeah. This kind of gets to another bit of research that you took part in. You researched the impact of the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why. And for those who may not be familiar with it, the show features the story of a high school student who died by suicide and, you know, ultimately the people in her life who she blames for her death. What did your research find about its impact?
So I think we went into this particular show not with a specific agenda against Netflix or anything like that, but really to know that there's a lot of research out there that suggests if you portray suicide in a sensationalized, glorified way, or if you depict a person engaging in suicidal behavior in a really graphic way, and a number of other factors that we were concerned about, the specific season one show, that we really wanted to see if this was associated with increased suicide rates among children and adolescents. So the Center for Disease Control had released data from a specific data set that would, as soon as it was released from 2017, we started to explore what these associations look like. And we did find that among 10 to 17-year-olds specifically, so among the youngest viewer group, even though it is TVMA, we know that lots of middle schoolers and high schoolers watch the show, that in the subsequent couple of months right after the show released, above and beyond the increases in youth suicide rates, that there was a sharp increase in the rates of actual suicides after this show. So it's not causal. There's lots of factors that could play into this, but it was the highest month in the last 5 years of youth suicides the month after that show. So, and we controlled again for all the trends and the seasonal variations. So it was concerning from our part that a major media show that was targeting young kids really did not adhere to the guidelines and did not adhere to what we know portraying suicide in a healthy way can look like, in a responsible way. So we'd like there to be more attention to doing this well.
Well, in watching this show as an adult, of course, the show does in some ways speak to, I think, what teens, some teens at least, kind of want from that act, in that all of the people in her life are now paying attention to her in a way that they weren't when she was alive. And in that way, it was a little concerning, even as an adult watching it. But the research gets to a point that's a little complicated to untangle, which is ultimately media's impact on suicide. And obviously, we're talking right now on the radio. How do we talk about suicide in a way that's healthy, that both acknowledges why people do this, but also moves the conversation forward?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that it does end up confusing some folks that we have this one message that says don't depict suicide in a way that's glamorizing, that's misleading, that does not characterize the actual available resources and hope that's out there. Yet on the other hand, we're not looking to censor this conversation at all. We have conversations with dozens and dozens of school communities, you know, every year about what are we looking for? What are the risk factors? What are the things that adults can do to support kids? And what can kids do to support each other? So we need those conversations to be had. And what was concerning about the way the 13 Reasons Why Season 1 went about it is they portrayed suicide as the inevitable result of trauma, the inevitable result of adults failing to support, that there were certain people to blame. We know suicide's really complicated, and there's often underlying mental health contributors in addition to many factors in one's environment. And I think more harm was done than good by depicting suicide in this way of a person really trying to be manipulative and vengeful. Most as a clinical psychologist, I've worked with hundreds of kids who have had thoughts or behaviors related to suicide, and they typically feel like a burden. They feel like they can't do anything right. They feel like the people around them, even if they're well-intentioned, don't understand them. And to depict something that suggests, you know what, if you're struggling, don't reach out to anyone. Don't believe that there's hope, like, you know, that there are they don't understand how many resources there are. That kind of plays into that stereotype. And then what you mentioned, the idea that after one dies, they'll be able to sort of have this outer body experience where they can watch everyone struggle and see, and kind of use the teen fantasy approach of, oh, like, you'll miss me when I'm dead. I mean, how many of us have actually had that thought, you know, in the teen years, whereas this one's really kind of depicting the idea that this is something that people are going to experience and teach everyone a lesson, and they'll actually be able to see this unfold, which I think is unhelpful, and that it solved some sort of a problem. That's the other thing that suicide prevention advocates are always trying to help not send the message, that this is an effective way to deal with life's pain, that it's a viable option. And then the last piece is really that graphic depiction of Hannah's taking her own life in one of the most violent ways that we've seen on television, which I, even as an adult, is problematic. And so those who have struggled with suicide attempts or suicide loss can easily be triggered by that kind of a depiction. And again, we'd recommend that people who have struggled personally with that not view those specific scenes, because that can be highly re-triggering.
It was very jarring. The scene gets very graphic.
Yeah, and I think what happened is the producers, they literally said, if we show suicide in the most graphic and unappealing way possible, it will make people reconsider it or think against it. But we know that's not how suicide contagion works. That is not what happens to individuals who are struggling with thoughts of suicide and having these feelings. It is something that can be very upsetting and actually increase risk. So unfortunately, I do think the producers may have been well-intentioned, but I wish they had followed the science a little bit more clearly on this one.
Yeah. Teen suicides have been trending upward for years. You know, some people have called it an epidemic. It's still relatively rare, but either way, it is trending upward. How do we change that?
I mean, on the bright side of things, we have not even begun to tap into the resources that we have. There are so many public health strategies that would be effective here, from screening in schools and primary cares to increase early identification, which we do in Central Ohio a great deal of, but are continuing to expand these options. We need suicide-specific treatments that have a stronger evidence base. There are some really good treatments, including dialectical behavioral therapy, versions of cognitive behavioral therapy, a treatment called CAMS, or the Collaborative Assessment and Management of Suicidality, that is increasingly shown to be effective in young people. We need to make sure that our communities are involved in this, because even if we had every single therapist trained and licensed working with individuals who have some suicide risk, we would still not have an adequate workforce. So we need to make sure that parents can have early conversations, and we need to make sure that our community leaders and youth organizations have folks that are trained to be able to look out and support kids who are at risk. For example, we're working with the Boys and Girls Club of America to make sure they have suicide prevention programming, and we work in lots of schools at a universal level so that we don't wait to just identify the kids who are at highest risk. We give everyone a dose of what to do and how to work through periods of crisis, and I think that's what we need to be thinking about, not just how do we identify or hospitalize those who are at highest risk. We need everyone equipped with tools when they experience an emotional crisis, because most of us do experience an emotional crisis. So it's good to have those tools one way or the other, and to be able to help the friends that we see struggling.
Dr. John Ackerman is the Suicide Prevention Coordinator for the Center of Suicide Prevention and Research at Nationwide Children's Hospital. His most recent research looked at the rise in poisoning attempts by teens and the impact of the show 13 Reasons Why on suicide rates. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers, and you can find a link to both of his reports at WUWM.com.